Well, folks, welcome back to the First and Soul podcast, where Bogoss, myself, and Tracy Black are continuing our coaches and community tour all around North Alabama. And, buddy, I will tell you, Tracy, we are having a blast going week to week, getting to talk to some of the most awesome people on the planet, in my mind.
No doubt. And it's been, you know, as far as just getting to know these coaches on a personal basis, getting to spend one-on-one time and really understanding, you know, their background, what the game, because we talked the other day with a coach and, you know, nobody's teaching and coaching to get rich. It's not about the money. It's about passion.
Absolutely.
And what these guys care about. And that's been one of the most impressive things to me so far is getting to know these coaches, their background, and just seeing how much not just that program means to them, but the kids that make up that program.
Yeah, and I'm really excited about today because I grew up in Southwest Decatur, Alabama. And my entire life, I wore the colors of orange and black. And today, Tracy, we get to sit down and talk to the one and only Coach Jeremy Perkins from the Austin Black Bears. Coach, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a blessing.
Well, Coach, we come to the games on Friday nights. We wave our hands, wave the pom-poms, listen to such a great band, which, by the way, Tracy, Coach will agree with me, the Black Bears have always had a really outstanding good band, haven't they?
Absolutely.
And but anyway, we come here on Friday nights and have such a good time. Who is Coach Perkins throughout the week on a football fall Friday night? Walk through a normal week with us.
Well, I mean, if you start the week after the game, Friday night is getting everything cleaned up, getting uniforms washed, evaluating everything that happened, good, bad, ugly, the great things of the game, evaluating every player, what went wrong, what went right, all those things. Usually stay pretty late on Friday nights. I usually get home by 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. By the time uniforms are washed and put away, and all evaluations done, and try to wrap that game up. So early Saturday morning when I wake up, it's focus on the next opponent. And so Saturday, as a staff, we usually work at home. Huddle allows us to do that and watch a lot of video, get to know your opponent, start formulating a plan for how you're going to attack and defeat that next team. We come in Sunday at 1 o'clock as a staff. I usually come in a little earlier, try to get a head start. We game plan all Sunday, usually get home by Sunday night about 8, 9 o'clock. And then we're trying to have practice ready, scripted, carded up for scout teams and everything before we leave Sunday night for Monday's practice. We come in and lift Monday morning at 7. We usually have freshman JV games. Then we're meeting with the kids, installing the game plan, and then practicing Monday afternoon. Every practice we come in, we evaluate the film, see what looked good, what didn't look good, what do we need to tweak, what do we need to change. My game plan throughout the week is day by day. So Monday is more of a basic offense and defensive scheme, introducing what the other team does and how we're going to attack them with basic plays. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is more situational, trying to cover every situation down and distance, field position, right hash, left hash, moments of the game. Are you behind? Are you ahead? And then, you know, attacking what they do and familiarizing your kids with whatever plays they run, whatever defenses they run, the coverages, and how to recognize and identify those things. So we meet, we practice, we meet some more, we practice some more Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then, of course, Friday is walkthroughs and then put it on the field again.
Here we go again. Yeah, I love it.
Coach, you know, I was reading an article this morning. It was talking about the preparation that goes into high school football. and like you just walked us through an entire week. We'll back that up a little bit. So it's graduation week here. Most schools across the state, this is our graduation week. The torch has been passed from last year's senior class to the next year's senior class. It all starts with summer workouts. And then, you know, you got your summer workouts, you got 7-on-7, you got ready for fall camp. It's basically the article this morning said 94% of the time is preparation to perform 6% of the time during the season. You got 10 weeks with the regular season and then 5 weeks of playoffs. What do you think from a player, not a coach, but a player's perspective, what kind of impact has that had on them in the last few years with that much preparation have to go into their season?
Well, first of all, you got to back it way up before the summer.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when we got beat in the first round of playoffs on Friday night, the following Monday is when we started preparing for this upcoming season. That's weight room. I meet individually with every returning player. We talk about goals. We talk about, you know, how the season, we reflect back to the season, how things went for them. We talk about what their goals are, weight room-wise, size-wise, speed-wise, and then what they want to see happen for them going into the next season, and then how do you achieve that? You know, so guys want to be starters. Guys want to win a state championship. Guys want to win a region. I mean, all these goals pop up in these meetings. Well, it's not enough to say this is what I want. How do we go about achieving that? How do you become a starter? How do you become a rotational player? What do you need to do? What do you need to accomplish? And we go through those meetings the month of November and December. It's a full evaluation from me, top to bottom, of the entire program, what needs to change, how do we go about the off-season workouts. And then, of course, we come back from Christmas, off-season workouts go full force. Our January through the month of May, really the end of April, start of spring training, is one of the most pivotal times for our program because that's where you grow the players the most. They learn physical toughness through the off-season. They get bigger, stronger, and faster. They learn a lot about themselves and about each other. That's where you build a little bit of team unity. And, you know, that's where the sweat, the blood, the tears happen. It's off-season workouts can be miserable at times. Then you go through spring training. And the spring training is a foot race of, you know, trying to get 9 practices in and play a game. We do some installation stuff, some of our 2-hour-a-week stuff throughout the spring before that. And then the summer, you know, the summer is huge as well. It's the bigger for us in the scheme. And, you know, and when I say scheme, you know, a lot of people put emphasis on scheme, what you do. What you do doesn't really matter. It's how you do it that matters. It's why like you can it. Have a two tight end eye pro team that wins state championships, scores 500 points in a season, or you can have a 5-wide spread it out team score 500 points in a season, and you can have both of them score 200 points and get beat and go 0-10. You know, it's not about what you do, it's how you do it. And anything you do, if you do it well, you're going to have success. And you can have the most innovative schemes out there, and if you don't do anything well, you don't block it right, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
So, you know, but that's where our growth happens as football players the most in June and July, because we can slow down and we can really try to master how to do things and the technique and the learning the game of football, you know, all those things. But having the amount of preparation time is crucial because the game of football is unlike anything else. And there's so many elements to it. And as much time as we have, we're still underprepared in a lot of cases.
Sure.
And one of the turnarounds to the, you know, your comment, we have 94% preparation time, but the game is still about blocking and tackling. And we get and out of all the sports, that's the least amount that you'll do in the actual game in that preparation time. So we can go out there and run around in our shorts and helmets all day long, but we don't get better at tackling and we don't get better at blocking in those times. We do to a certain extent, but it's not the real thing. No. If you play baseball and basketball, every time you take the court or every time you take the – you're doing the same things you do in a game. You go in a batting cage, you're doing the same thing you do in a baseball game. And football, that 94% of preparation, only about 30% is what you're doing in the actual game. Huh. So
didn't even think about that.
You know, you get to August, and the biggest element, blocking and tackling, you've done the least amount of, and you have the short, really short, quick time, and we have contact rules that we have to abide by. You have very little preparation for those two things.
Coach, I could only imagine you were talking about how you bring in the kids individually, and I'm assuming they're sitting where I'm sitting, across the desk from you. How fulfilling is it? It's got to be fulfilling when you see them come in as a young freshman to what you got to do last night is to shake the hands of your seniors who are now moving on in their lives year in and year out after that last football game, and they're sitting across the desk from you, seeing them grow maturity-wise, mentally, physically. I mean, you get to watch these young men go from boys to young men, whether it's how they speak. Man, I think it's phenomenal what you're doing, because without them knowing it, you're really teaching them how to interview. You're teaching them how to be disciplined on themselves, on how to set goals and all that. How fulfilling is that?
Well, I mean, that's one of the rewards is as a coach. And you know, and I love that aspect of it, that you can see sometimes kids, these quiet, small, skinny kid walk in.
That wasn't me, by the way, Coach. I was skinny.
You know, a young man walk in with very little confidence as a ninth grader, and to see him leave with confidence and know and get to see the transition and how much he's grown. I mean, that's awesome, and love that part of it. You know, but really, and I think most coaches would say this, it's what they are 5 and 10 years down the road. It really brings that satisfaction of job well done. A lot of times you don't get to see the fruits of your labor until later on, but you know, just like having, you know, I've got some guys on staff that played for me several years ago, and getting to watch those guys in full circle now coach.
Yeah,
I mean, that's awesome.
That's got to be awesome.
You know, you lose contact with a lot of guys as well, but to hear so-and-so's doing this, so-and-so's got two kids, so-and-so's got this job or whatever he's doing in the community, that's awesome. Because at the end of the day, that's what you want to see. You want to see those kids be successful. And there's reverse of theirs, or the opposite of that, and you see kids that, as they turn into men, they struggle. They make bad decisions. They go down a wrong path or wrong road. So there's heartbreak in it as well.
Yeah.
Well, you talk too about, and people that don't know Austin are not familiar with Austin, or they know, you know, about Austin and the tradition here. You know, Coach Perkins heading into his 16th season. You don't stay anywhere that long if you're not doing a good job. I promise you that.
That's exactly right.
And I'm just sitting here looking over at the wall here, and, you know, you look at 2015 to 2016, Austin played in the semifinals. 2017, they had an undefeated season. So all of the stuff that you've been able to accomplish over the years, do you ever get to a point where you're just like, man, I've done this, I've done it? Or do you still have that fire every day that you're wanting to outdo yourself every day?
Well, I mean, most coaches, one of the common threads is competitiveness. You know, as going from player to coach, that was probably the biggest thing. I mean, as a player, I don't miss two-a-days. I don't miss some of the soreness and the pain and those types of things. You know, there was some relief when all that was over, when my college playing days were done, that, you know, my body got to rest a little bit. But you do miss the competitiveness. You know, that's, as an athlete, you know, you love to compete. And I can remember when I was young, I mean, going to play pickup basketball. We had some of the most amazing competitive basketball games, and I wasn't a very good basketball player, but you know, just I thrived in competition. Yep. And when you get older, you don't get that anymore. So as a coach, you still get to compete. It's a little bit more on the hands of somebody else doing the actual competition. But, you know, there's still that competitive element there. And so that fire burns day in, day out. We want to be the best that we can possibly be. I don't like to lose. I want to win. You know, and I want these kids to experience some of the things that other kids have experienced in our program. I wanted to experience the type of great moments and special moments that I had as a player. You know, you want those things. So that fire burns, and it's still there. There's things that I'm, you know, I've been in it long enough that I'm tired of, that I don't like the way they're going, and things that I don't like to deal with, but you have to do some of the unpleasant things to get to do the joyous things. And, you know, it's the same thing I tell those kids. Yes, these off-season workouts are miserable sometimes. They're hard. But you do these so you get to do the great things, the things that, you know, that you signed up for.
Not what you do, but how you do it. That's a great line.
Yeah. Not what you do, but how you do it. How did you get to where you are today as far as football? When did you know this is what you wanted to do?
Well, as far as coaching, I always wanted to be involved with athletics. You know, right there beside you is one of my favorite Bible verses. It says, do everything for the glory of God. So as far as I was given so much, blessed with so much as a young man, talent-wise and opportunity-wise, and I always wanted to give back. God gifted me with these blessings, and these blessings, your talents are God's gift to you, and what you do with those talents is your gift back to God. So what I wanted was the opportunity to give back. I always knew I wanted to stay in the world of athletics because I was most passionate about athletics. It's not who I am, it's what I do, and it's my opportunity to give back to all that was given to me by the good Lord and other people who invested in me. I knew I wanted to do this. So, you know, I was a football/baseball coach starting out, and probably whichever one was in season, if you would ask me at that time, I would have preferred that one in particular. You know, I loved and had a passion for coaching baseball, just like I had a passion for playing baseball. You know, same as football. But when I started coaching, football kind of took the driver's seat in that. So I've always known I wanted to do it. There was no question. I just didn't know how to go about it. You know, when I was young, when I learned and got the opportunities, I've run with it. You know, it's people ask me now, how long am I going to stay in it? I've got 29 years in education. I could go turn in retirement papers today if I wanted to. Mm-hmm. The problem is I don't want to.
Yeah.
And, you know, it goes back to that fire and passion. It's still there, and it's still burning just as high as it did 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And, you know, I can't imagine myself doing anything else. So, you know, I'll probably coach till I'm on my deathbed. you know, so I almost would rather not be in the years you can retire, because it wouldn't even be a topic of conversation. A lot of people thought I was going to retire this year because my daughter was graduating.
Yep.
And, of course, every year I've been here, I've been rumored to leave. But, you know, I'm glad so many people around here know what I'm doing before I do.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is what God intended me to do. I feel like I can still be a blessing for other people and make a difference and matter in the lives of these young men and the coaches who work under me. So as long as that's the case, then I would imagine I'll keep plugging away at it.
Well, we were talking before we came on air, and a lot of people might not know this about Coach. So Coach was at Hoover before he came to Austin, and, you know, was part of the two-a-days that they had there and stuff. I would like to know, and maybe the listeners would like to hear, between Hoover and Austin here and the way the game has changed over this last 15, 20 years, what's been the biggest impact, do you think, the kids from back then to now? Do you see a big difference in the kids, or it's kids are kids?
Well, kids are kids for sure. Society changes, and the expectations and the standards of society that we put on people and kids and programs and all those things change. Kids will always push the limits of what they are allowed to do. They'll always flirt with the line of what's right and wrong, and they're always going to test the limits, so to speak. And what we as a society, or what I as a coach, or what we as parents allow them to get away with and make excuses for them and tell them it's okay that they make these, you know, just pat them on the back even though they're wrong, those things change. The world around the kids has changed. And some good, some not good. And I think that with that, the expectations. And I tell our kids, we have a standard. That standard is a championship-style standard. And we have things that we hold them to that standard for. And I tell them all the time, we're not going to lower our standard for you. You've got to raise your level to meet the standard. Now, do some fall short of it? Absolutely. But we always drive and push to meet the standard. And we hold them accountable when they don't, or they face consequences when they don't. We as a society shouldn't lower our standards because we feel like they're too high for some people to meet. We should push everybody to meet the standard and not change it. And I truly believe that the years that I've been in it, that's the biggest thing that's changed, the expectation and the standards we hold them to. That's one of the things you see in education. Education right now, because of outlying factors, is different than it was when I went to school. And again, we've changed what the standard is, what the expectation is, and holding people accountable to those standards and expectations. Some things, again, are not, it's not somebody I can just point at and say it's your fault, but we shouldn't change those things. And you see it in college football now. Those things are changing dramatically.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it's trickling down to the other levels, and there's a lot of other factors that play into it. But no, I mean, kids are kids.
Yep. That's the best answer I've heard. That's phenomenal.
I mean, they're going to do what you expect them to do, or what you hold them to.
Yep.
And what's important to you, they're going to make it important to them. And you'll have some of them that refuse to meet those expectations, and they'll find something else to do. And there's somewhere else to do it, plain and simple. But you don't change those things for anybody.
Coach, being involved in high school football and having the opportunity for a few years, being involved in the radio side for you guys, I see a man of passion that sitting across the desk from me on a weekly basis, a monthly basis, and a yearly basis that makes tons of impacts on tons of kids. Who was your Coach Perkins? Who was the guy that made an impact in your life?
Well, there's been several. I mean, I probably missed some, but I mean, my father was the first and foremost impact on my life. I mean, he set an example of hard work, self-reliance. He set an example of how to do things. And, you know, and he held me to that standard and that, you know, pushed me to be the very best I could be as a child. He disciplined me when I needed to be disciplined. He loved me when I needed to be loved. And, you know, he didn't change what the expectation was because I felt this way or felt that way or agreed with or disagreed. So he was the first example. I played for Ricky Seal at Thompson High School, who made a great impact on me, and I went back and later coached for Ricky. He was my boss, basically, as a young coach coming out of college. He got me hired. I was with him for 9 years at Thompson. Barry Jones was an assistant on that staff that made a huge impact. I would give him a lot of credit for planting a lot of seeds that led me to make the decision to follow Jesus. He led the FCA for our high school team, and some of the seniors when I was a sophomore made a huge impact on my life at that time. I was going down a very bad path, making a lot of bad decisions, and you know, they got me involved with something different, which was, you know, it was a blessing. And those seeds were planted, and shortly after I made the decision to follow Jesus, and life changed dramatically after that. So they made a huge impact. But I mean, every coach that I've coached under and worked for helped mold who I am today. Guys that I coached with that were colleagues on staff, they made impacts and influence. I mean, I've coached under or with some really, really good football coaches. You know, there's some that I learned what not to do.
Yeah, sure.
You know, there's, you know, one of the architects of the way football is played in the state of Alabama today was Rush Probst. You know, I learned as much from him on the blueprint of success as I'd say with anybody, but I also learned a lot of things not to do. There's a lot of things that I didn't really agree with the way he did things. So, I mean, those are things I put emphasis on going the opposite direction. Josh Niblett made a huge impact when he came in my last couple of years at Hoover, and the way he did. And of course, I worked under Jeremy Pruitt defensively at Hoover. Learned a lot of football from him. Kevin Scherer was a great impact as well. We worked together at Hoover. Chip Lindsey, David Faulkner, two offensive coordinators at Hoover at my time there. The list is long of coaches that made impacts. 2014, we had the worst season that I've ever had as a football coach or a football player. It was 2-8 that year. We struggled. We lost some close games early, but struggled to do things right. And there was a lot of discipline issues. There was a lot of issues throughout the season. At the end of the season, I was kind of at a crossroads of, is this where I'm meant to be? And is this what I was meant to be doing? And being a head football coach at Austin High School. And so some decisions had to be made. And I sat down with a guy by the name of Jerry Hood. Jerry's the head coach at Leeds High School now, but he had been at Clay Chalkville. He had been at Oak Mountain. I'd coached against him several years in Birmingham, and knew Jerry well. And we sat down at a coaching clinic, and you know, there's some pieces of advice he gave me in that talk and during that time that really, really helped me at a time where I was struggling as a coach. And if you look at history, we went from 2-8 to 10-4 the next year. And a lot of that change had to do with some of the advice that he gave me during that time and his own experience as a coach. He had been fired, you know, and there he was. Jerry was the team that beat us in the semifinals, Clay Chalkville, that next year. So, you know, and he had just come off of a 15-0 season. When they beat us, that was our 29th win in a row. Wow. So it was good advice from a guy who had been fired at his previous job and was now, you know, the reigning state champion and having an opportunity to go compete for another one. There's a lot of impact, a lot of coaches. There's coaches I've had work here that made impacts. It's endless. But those are some guys that were dear and special.
Buddy, he dropped some big names.
Boy, I'm talking some powerhouse coaches were just listed there. I mean, that's incredible. You know, a lot of coaches, if they just can talk to or be around one of those coaches, would make an impact on their career. And look at the coaches he named. I mean, goodness gracious. But go back and, you know, I mentioned it earlier, but you just said 2014, you went 2-8. You followed that up with semifinals, and an undefeated season. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, that's a testament in itself. Coach, if a former player or just a young coach in general were to reach out and say, hey, I'm thinking about doing this for a living. I've got a passion to coach high school athletics. If somebody reached out to you for advice, what would be a word of advice you would give to somebody just starting out in this profession?
First of all, to soak in everything that you can, to write down, to document anything and everything, to gain as much knowledge as you can. The other thing to watch, to pay attention to the way other coaches do things. I think that was one mistake I made early on. I know my time at Thompson, it was great. I worked up the ladder coming in as a position coach defensively, to later becoming the defensive coordinator, to only have my heart ripped out. And, you know, and which led to me actually leaving Thompson to go to Hoover. And that time was, you know, my dream job was the Thompson job at the time. That was home to me. That's where I grew up, played. I grew up in Alabaster. I mean, that was home. I went straight there after college, and I fully expected and anticipated to become the head football coach at Thompson High School when the time came. Well, the head coach, Ricky Seale, announced his retirement. Later that day, they named the defensive back coach the interim head coach, and I was the defensive coordinator. A couple weeks later, they named him the permanent head coach, and it broke my heart. It did at that time that I didn't really get considered for it. I was the longest tenured coach on staff at the time, with the exception of one who was about to retire as well. And so, and that was home. And there's no place that's going to break your heart quicker than home will. So, I mean, I went through that. I went to Hoover, 2 weeks at Hoover. I figured out and learned real quick that I wasn't ready. And the reason I wasn't ready is because I didn't pay attention as a young coach. There were a lot of elements that, I mean, if you want to be a head football coach, there's a lot more to being a head football coach than just X's and O's. And so you got to pay attention. You got to pay attention to how money's raised, how money's spent. You got to pay attention to discipline and how to manage an entire team, how to manage parents, how to put together a plan and a blueprint for your entire program. You can't do it by the seat of your pants day by day. You have to have the entire scope from day one, which is the first day after one season ends, to day 365, which is the last day of the next season. Where do you want to get this team? How do you get them there? And there's a lot to that, more than just what offense you run or what defense you run. And so pay attention.
Man, you just laid out a business plan.
And even worse, I tell coaches, I have coaches, you know, and I ask them in interviews and things of that nature, and we meet one-on-one as individual coaches because I want to know what their goals are and where they're heading and what they're trying to do. So, you know, one thing I tell them, if they want to be, if they're an aspiring head coach, so one thing you ought to understand, when you're an assistant coach, 95% of what you do is coach football. You coach kids. Whether it's in a meeting room, in the weight room, on the field, wherever it is, you're coaching kids. That's, you show up, you coach the kids, you go home. When you're the head coach, 25% of what you do is coach football. So 75% of what you do is other things. But here's the kicker. You still coach the same amount of football as when you were assistant. I don't coach any less as a head coach than I did as an assistant coach. I'm doing 75% other stuff. And so you got to pay attention. And like I said, when I went to Hoover and seeing how things operated at Hoover, it took me a very short time. I wasn't ready. The good Lord knew what he's doing, even though it ripped my heart out when I didn't get considered for that job. Had I gotten that job, I'd have fallen flat on my face. There's no telling where I would be right now. I needed what I got before becoming a head coach. And even when I got this job, I was a lot more prepared because I paid a lot closer attention because I got humbled a little bit, but I still had a lot to learn. You know, I had to learn on the fly, and I had to be willing to ask people for help.
You know, people talk all the time about wisdom. And when you think about the book of Proverbs and people, you know, praying for understanding, what Coach just went through. That's probably any young coaches out there, anybody that's upset about something that's happened in their coaching career, you should really dissect what he just said and take it to heart, because that is probably one of the most wise wisdom conveyance I've ever heard. I mean, that explains it all. Yes, it was upsetting. Yes, I wanted that job, but now I realize if I'd have got that job, it'd have been the wrong place. So when he's leading you through stuff, challenges, trials, whatever, there's a purpose on the other side. Man, that was fantastic, Coach.
Yeah, but the problem is sometimes you don't see the lesson or the purpose until after you've already gone through the pain, and the pain sucks.
No, it 100%. Does.
It sucks bad.
But that's with anything, and it's, I mean, hindsight's 20/20, and you live and learn on the experiences you have, but coaches have egos. I mean, let's just call it what it is. Every coach thinks that they're a great coach, and, yeah, you know, I deal with it with some of my own assistants of thinking that they can do things better than other people. Some think they can do it better than I can do it. And, you know, I had an ego at that time that I thought I could do this and that. But, I mean, you go through other experiences and you go through time, and it teaches you that I wasn't as good as I thought I was, or I didn't know as much as I think I do. And sometimes it's just being around somebody that knows a lot more than you.
That's right. Who's been through it.
Yeah. Amen. It's same thing for every Friday night, that all the people in the stands who think they know better what play call to make.
That's,
or,
that's,
you know,
every stadium in the United States.
Yes. They don't count the 60 hours of film that I watched on the opponent.
Yeah, that's right.
And on my own team, there's nothing that's called out there on Friday night that wasn't well planned and well thought out. I mean, people have confidence, I guess you could say, in their own abilities and think that they know better than everybody else who's making the decisions. But, you know, when you actually are put in that situation and you have to perform at a high level and do it at a very fast pace, you learn that it's not quite as easy as it seems. Anybody can sit there and say, oh, that play lost 2 yards, so that was a bad call. It was a bad call because it lost 2 yards. Same play might have gained 60 two series before.
Yep. Somebody missed a block. Somebody didn't do what they're supposed to.
Yeah, he's told me before, it wasn't a bad call at all. It was the right call. Their defense lined up like it was supposed to do. Our offense did exactly what we were supposed to do. They just executed and we didn't.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about execution.
Yeah.
It's the bottom line. It comes down to, again, how you do it.
Yep.
Not what you do. Every play in our playbook is designed to go forward except for one, and that's the best play in our playbook, and that's victory.
Coach, you need to put that on a shirt. How you do it, not what you do.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. When you hear the word football, what's it mean to you?
There's so many elements to that. Life. And the game of football teaches you life.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that's so drawing and appealing to it. You know, when you look at just the on the surface, the game of football is just a game. You know, it's scoring touchdowns, getting stops, turnovers and penalties and all those elements. Just a game, just like if you open up a chessboard right now, it's a game. There's strategy involved and there's moves that you make are the right moves or the wrong moves, and you don't know till after the fact of which one it's going to be. But the game of football teaches you life, the ups and downs, the seasons that you have to go through, the struggles, the injuries, the perseverance that you have to learn through it, the heartbreak, the moments that take your breath away. The greatness of the game itself mimics life in so many ways. That's what football means to me, but it's also an avenue to teach, to grow, and grow in so many ways. Because, I mean, when we train our kids, we don't just train them to become bigger, stronger, and faster. We try to train the whole person. You know, we try to train them in what they think or how they think and what they feel or how they feel. and handling those things, because that's what you're going to go through in the battle and the game of life. Is, you know, it's, life's not about what happens to you. It's how you respond to it that matters. You want to train your body to be the best it can be, go through the difficulties of the pain and the hardships and that training. But you also want to train your mind and train your heart. Because again, those are going to be sometimes the tougher battles.
Absolutely.
And you know, I try to tell our kids also, the most difficult opponent we're ever going to face is ourselves.
100%.
And that goes to what goes between the ears and what's in your chest. And so, you know, there's so many impactful people in these kids' lives, and so many differing opinions and thoughts and blame and all these things. There's so many messages that are being given to these kids, trying to get them to think the right way, to feel the right way. That's the battle. And you know, you're dealing with kids. Emotions are high. Again, that's the battle. But the game of football, it settles all that.
Yeah.
You know, it does. And I mean, they have to deal with those emotions and those thoughts and those feelings, and they grow from them.
Coach, you know, we at First and Sold, one thing that we do is really highlight the communities and what, you know, these football programs around the state. They mean so much to those communities. So, you know, Austin is located in the city of Decatur. You have a crosstown rival. I guess there's a railroad track that kind of separates both sides of the town, and where you basically go to school, where you're going to play attend school at. So when you think about Austin and when you think about the community that surrounds Austin, if you were talking to a parent that's relocating to the area, they've got a kid that's coming to school here, maybe they want to play football, what are some of the advantages, in your opinion, that why they should come to Austin and why should they make this community their home?
For me, it's testimony. I've coached at three places now: Thompson High School, Hoover High School, and Austin High School. And my time at Thompson High School was 9 years. My time at Hoover High School was 5 years, and I've been here for 15 years. My youngest daughter graduated from Austin High School yesterday, which makes both my children graduated from Austin High School. So my testimony in that is I've been at three great places. The place I'm currently at, and I've been at the longest in those three places, is Austin High School. Now, as a family man, as a husband and a father, I would not put my kids and my family in a situation that I could not be proud of. And I'm proud to be an Austin Black Bear. So my testimony is, this is a great place that you can achieve any and every goal, dream, success that you can at anywhere else. And I truly believe that your home is where your feet are. Hoover High School, my time there was a great place as well. Hoover's football-wise, they've garnered a lot of success. Thompson High School, my time there, I wouldn't trade for anything. That was my home. It will always be a home to me. You know, they're at the top of the food chain right now in the game of football, in a lot of sports. So those two places are great places. I mean, they helped mold me and shape me into the person I am today. But Austin High School is a great place as well, which is why I'm still here. Any place is just a place. It's what you make of it is what makes it a great place or a terrible place. What you invest in it, everybody in that place has the duty and the opportunity to make that place great. And one of the things that I loved about Austin High School when I came here in 2010, and I left as a state champion at Hoover High School to come to Austin High School, who was a 500 program at best on a good year, but was the people. It's not the place, it was the people. And just some of the best people that helped the culture of Austin High School be great. People like Risa Cheatham, Joy Dixon, Ann Falk, Ann and Joy are still here at Austin High School. There was countless number of people that made Austin home to me and my family. They made a great impact in the school and the community. And that's what makes it great. A lot of those people have moved on, but some are still here and other people have come in to make it great as well. I hope that my being here makes it a better place. You know, that's the goal. It, again, home is where your feet are, and you're going to make it great or you're going to make it terrible based on your attitude and how you approach every day and approach the people around you. There's kids that graduated last night that will be forever thankful because they had teachers that loved them and administrators that loved them and did everything they could to make their experience the best it could be.
This is your town. I'm going to let you have this moment. But I've got to say, if Coach ever wants to do anything else in life, be a pretty good motivational speaker.
Absolutely. If you ever need somebody to come be a guest speaker to, one, teach you how to build a business, how to build a character, I mean, Coach Perkins is all on this. Coach, I'm proud to call you a friend and just excited about the Austin Black Bear community, your players, and everybody involved. It means a lot for me to say that I graduated in 1995 as an Austin Black Bear, and I still today am proud to say that I'm an Austin Black Bear. On behalf of Southwest Decatur, we'd like to say thank you. Thank you for who you are and what you mean to this next generation. You're really good at what you do. Tracy, he's not going to ever mention this, but you do know he's the most winningest coach at Austin High School.
Oh, we said that earlier. Yeah, gotta be.
But, Coach, thank you so much. I will say you do need to let whoever that family is that calls you about coming to Austin, tell them they need to call First and Soul, Bo or Tracy. We'll help them find a house for sure.
Well, we don't have many people coming in, but, you know, we're going to coach the ones we got, so... You know, that's, I believe in that. I believe in doing this with integrity, and you know, winning's important, but it's not everything. And, you know, unfortunately, we live in a business where people don't always do it the right way. But I believe the testimony also is, you know, what you put out there to the kids. You better live by it.
Yep.
And,
Amen.
You know, I just don't feel like it's right to do it any other way.
Coach, y'all coming to Media Days the 21st and 22nd?
We plan on it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be, I thought we're going to have over 50 teams there this year. It's going
to
be exciting.
Do you have any advice to me and to about the First and Soul banquet that I held?
No, I thought it was well done. I felt like y'all did a good job with it. I'm excited about seeing how that grows and continues on. You know, we want to highlight these kids as much as possible. And I mean, like I said, I felt like that was well done. Hopefully we'll have some players making a substantial impact on the field and can be up for those awards again.
Is there a player we need to be ready to listen out for that you think may or may not hear? We already know.
Well, I mean, we've got several guys that are progressing to that direction. You know, guys like Kadir Lyle will be the quarterback this year. Got a lot of talent, a lot of ability, and expecting big things from him. But he's still got a lot of growth between now and August to put it all together. You know, there's some questions on who is going to emerge at the receiver position to kind of follow in the footsteps of Jackson Potter. But we've got some good candidates. And,
big shoes to fill.
Yeah. You know, running back, is there's still some big questions on that. So we'll leave that up in the air.
Okay.
Some of our, you know, leaders defensively are coming back, like DJ Orr and Mark Green, both the inside linebackers from last year. We expect them to stand out, and Caleb Caudill in the secondary. But, you know, there's a lot of work to be done to get this group ready and molded into a team. We've got some holes right now that we've got to shore up and, you know, get a lot better in some spots before we're ready to say we're going to compete to win.
Yeah.
Well, Coach, it's been an honor being here. This is a phenomenal facility. I mean, the school's only a few years old, and the facilities here are just they're second to none. I appreciate your time, and best of luck to you this coming season.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Coach, thank you so much.
Go Black Bears. My time.